Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaBusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome to the show. If you listened to last week's show, you know it was a pre-recorded show, so I'm a couple weeks rusty. So as I get back in the swing, we'll try to make this a fun and lively show, as I think it will be. One of the reasons is my guest that I have today, Dr. Dave Watterson. You folks will come to enjoy his candor and his examples of what we're going to talk about today, because today's subject is called Making Sense of Testing. And I think as the show unfolds, you'll find out more and more why I've asked Dave to be on today's show. But for those of you who may be new to listening to the show is called What's Leadership Got to Do with It? It's the premise of also the book called What's Leadership Got to Do with It, which should be published somewhere around the middle of December and ready for distribution. But our show is called What's Leadership Got to Do with It and follows the concepts of the book in relation to what I call the Fundamental Five, which outlines the five chapters, which has to do with culture is chapter one, individual dynamics is chapter two, group dynamics is chapter three, business dynamics is chapter four, and the structure of a business is chapter five. But throughout the book, it's inundated with examples that uses assessments in the process of a number of those things that the book speaks to. But today's specific topic today is making sense of testing, kind of the old adage of guess or assess. And the background of the last 20 years of my work makes no correlation to Dave's background over the last 41 years of his work, which is why I've asked him to be on the show. One of the things we're going to talk about is assessments in general. Specifically, we'll get into some specific assessments, but as we look at that, so what does the world of assessments contain? And most folks that may be listening to the show may be HR or some owners of businesses, but from an HR perspective, what Dave and I are going to discuss today is the multiple uses of selection tools, the multiple assessment tools that are on the market, and how do you differentiate between a commodity assessment and a specialized assessment. And we'll speak to some of those and give some examples, but we want to talk specifically about selection and development and job fit and succession planning and that whole world of what the hot topic is today around talent management. And how do you use assessments in the business world that help you become more effective in your talent management approach? And specifically around the world of using assessments as a means of doing that, when there's so many out there, how do you differentiate between, or in other words, is there a good, better, or best? So, Dave, what's your thoughts? Actually, let's introduce Dave more formally. Dave, why don't you just kind of tell our listeners kind of your background, and then we can talk about how you and I began to become more connected. So.
On, and it's certainly exciting to have an opportunity to talk about this subject. My background is I've been working with assessment instruments for 40 years, and certainly have a great appreciation for what it can do. I've applied it to the world of work, particularly in aligning talent with the organization's interests and making sure that the vision of the organization is aligned with the talent that it has to fulfill that vision. So you wanted to speak to the concept of in the tests, what's there is a plethora of tests out there today, and how do we figure out good, better, and best? So certainly there are simpler measures and then more complex measures, and the best idea, or the best, I guess, a way of making an analogy to that would be is the sophistication of any instrument. If you have a ruler, that's helpful. If you have an electronic micrometer, that makes it even better. Your ability to keep getting more precise and more accurate in your measurements increases then your ability to predict or anticipate what it is that you're looking to predict. So
Dave, let me just throw out then as an example to the listeners is where we're headed with this whole thing is it the commodity instruments that are on the market, a lot of HR folks are familiar with, and that happens to be the disc or even the extended disc, the Myers-Briggs, Caliper, Berkman. The predictive index is a very hot instrument out there today called the PI. And then there's things called the Berkman Profiles International, Target International. There's a Pradco. And there's just a host of those, what Dave has referred to in his and my conversations as more popular assessments or commodity-based versus psychologically based. And we'll talk about the difference. But the psychologically based instruments are the things like the 16PF and the Hogan, the NEO, the CPI, which is a California Personality Inventory, the OPQ, which are more specialized, more sophisticated instruments. So, Dave, if you could just maybe, because most of the HR folks I've come across in 20 years of doing this have never heard of the 16PF, and the Hogan's gaining more popularity because of its go-to-market style. But certainly when I get into the NEO or CPI or OPQ, when I ask HR folks if they've ever heard of those instruments, they kind of get the deer in the headlights look. So if you would speak to that, those two sides of the spectrum.
Well, I'm not even sure that there are two sides to the spectrum. I think it's the same spectrum, and it's the degree to which there is a level of application sophistication. So on a lot of the previous ones that you measured where, for instance, there are four quadrants that come out, like, or four areas like the disc that you referenced, it's a little simpler measure. It's still measuring the same issue, which is humans and the way they end up displaying themselves in the world. Bob Hogan, you referenced the Hogan, talks about it as reputation. So it's the person's reputation of how they are in the world. And the psychological, as you're referring to it, the more sophisticated psychological measures have attended to this for years, and it's the ability to be able to bring over that information in a relevant and appropriate way to apply to the business world and to the world of work. And so as that ability to be able to apply a more sophisticated measure to the world of work has gotten through technology and delivery, as it's been able to then be delivered to the world, it ends up being in alignment with testing regulations, the concerns that the Equal Opportunity Employment, EEOC, their concerns ends up being, is the measure that you're using related to what it is that is needed on the job? So as that ability to deliver the more in-depth sophistication to the questions that you have around hiring, development, selection, as it's appropriate, then you can get more sophisticated. So a lot of the development of those other measures that were simpler were developed because they could answer part of the question simply and without much intrusion and or without much violation of any of those concerns that EEOC had.
So one of the reasons I've asked Dave to be on the show is because one of the primary instruments that I've come to choose that I found in 3 years of my research to determine what was the best in that whole good, better, best equation, what was the best instrument of choice to me was the 16PF. I came to know Dave after having gone through a series of successive training programs that Dave put on through IPAT, who produced the 16PF, and met Dave, and we've developed that business relationship over those years. But Dave, for 25 years, was the lead Iowa psychologist that taught all the incoming psychologists on how to use the 16PF. So my background certainly is biased toward the 16PF in the last almost 20 years of using it, but Dave certainly has over 40 years of using it. So, Dave, if you would just kind of speak to the depth of the 16PF from your perspective.
Well, the Rick, you're modest about your exposure to the 16PF. The 16PF, by the way, is 16 personality factor, and is referring to the fact that in the original development of that instrument, Dr. Cattell, Raymond Cattell, who developed it, looked at the whole nature of ways to describe the human, and through the mathematical process of factor analysis came up with 16 dimensions that were able to differentiate one individual from another. And IPAT, by the way, is Institute for Personality and Ability Testing, and IPAT was developed in order to distribute the 16PF for purposes of research and application. And that started in the late 40s, early 50s, and has continued on over this full extent of time with better revisions and better application, but it has then been researched in thousands of studies in both medical, educational, military, business situations to be able to show what are the relationships between the way we describe behavior, humans' actions, and what is the relationship to various kinds of roles or jobs. So the 16PF is a sophisticated instrument with the dimensions being related to each other as well as to some broader dimensions. So the richness of information is very deep and very rich and very broad. And one of the advantages to that kind of instrument, as well as instruments like the Hogan and others, where there is a lot of breadth and depth to it.
Well, we're going to get ready to take a break here. As we kind of wrap up this first segment of discussion with Dave, we're going to come back and continue into more depth around assessments and the kinds of assessments, and the 16PF in particular we're going to spend some time with. But we're going to also talk about other things as it relates to using assessments in the business world, and we're going to get into some things like a battery of assessments. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with my host, Dr. Dave Watterson, and we look forward to the second half of the show, the second segment of the show. So we'll be back in a second.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, and you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. My firm is called The Executive Group. We've been in business for 20 years, and the show follows the outline of the book. For those listening in on today's show called What's Leaders or Making Sense of Testing, you can email us at rick@theeg.com, that's T-H-E-E-G.com, or call us at 866-472-5790. My guest is Dr. Dave Watterson, also an esteemed colleague, as we've done a lot of work together. I had the privilege of being brought in as Dave was working with one of the major steel companies. Had the privilege of coming in and work with Dr. Watterson on that project to help build a selection model for this large steel company. But we've also worked on some other things, and he's also been instrumental in my knowledge and education use of the 16PF, which is kind of what we're talking about. But one of the reasons that I asked Dave on the show was because as we get into the depth of instruments, and when you talk about breadth and depth, and the instruments like the DISC and the PI and the Myers-Briggs that we spoke to versus the Hogan or the 16PF, which we use, and also one that the Dr. Watterson has developed called the WPI, which I want him to speak to. But, you know, when we get into assessments, the advantage of using multiple assessments and what's called an assessment battery, the advantage of using a more sophisticated instrument that measures a broader degree of things that most of those commodity items don't get at, such as emotional resilience being one of them, to Dave Watterson's new assessment in the Expatriate Scale, which we've used with some of our clients in international work. Dave, if you'd speak to the, kind of the advantages of the 16PF and its differentiator in the world of measuring the emotional intelligence or emotional resilience component piece that most of the others, you know, don't capture.
Well, the first of all, the some of the goals that you're looking to get in the use of a battery is as full as possible. The number of data points that you're looking to capture in order to make a decision, or in some cases, as we certainly have applied it, in the use of it for gaining more self-awareness, which is part of the emotional intelligence piece. So you want as many pieces of information about how the person projects themselves into the world so that you can then make an informed choice, or you, if you're applying it to yourself, can have greater realization of the way you're coming across in the world. Now, certainly, a instrument like the 16PF has a very broad spectrum way of measuring that, and it's a little bit longer measure. Some of the other measures, Rick, that you've referred to are a little bit briefer and nowhere as complex. So, the Hogan, the 16PF, WPI are all a little bit longer. Now, they're not longer than 30, 40 minutes to take. So we're not talking about the 16PF itself. The entire battery can take a little over an hour, but you're also measuring both the style that somebody has as well as the ability. So we also have some ability measures that go into the battery. And so you want to, in the big picture, look at what's the least amount of time you can get the most information in order to make your best choice. And that's really what you're doing with assessment and gaining from standardized measures information to balance against what you know of the history of the individual and what you get out of the interview. So the 16PF has depth and breadth. The battery gives you even a further reach. You can then align that with your interview and align that with your information you've gotten from a resume and other kinds of documentation.
So speaking from a battery perspective, for those who really don't understand the concept of a battery, because again, in the role of HR, you give somebody the caliper, or you give them a Myers-Briggs or something along that line. But speaking the role from a battery, in our battery, we use the 16PF. We may use the Hogan. We may use the DISC. We will incorporate like a Watson Glaser that looks at thinking skills or a Thurston test of mental alertness. There may be anywhere from 4 to 6 assessments in totality based on the level of the individual and the role. So the more sophisticated the role, the more sophisticated the battery, and the more in-depth the battery becomes. So based on that, Dave, where would you then look at then using that battery, whether you're looking at maybe a manager versus a plant manager versus a president versus a chairman of the board?
Well, your battery certainly, as you went up there, you're gonna want to pay attention to the length, the difficulty of the battery, as to the level, to the groups of your norm sample that you've used in order to qualify that battery, and the kinds of validated information you have relative to those tests. And to each one of those population groups that you've been talking about, and that's really going to help you differentiate and be more specific to which ones would apply, where you might want to modify some of those batteries depending on, or the elements to the test battery that you're talking about.
All right. So then, as we look at then the concept of, if behavior is the biggest predictor of performance and we're trying to go after and understand true behavior, and the simplistic nature of the DISC or predictive index or even the Myers-Briggs, that doesn't allow us to get at the true behavioral elements that derail an individual, because the Hogan speaks to derailers, but one of the things that speaks to derailers that the 16PF carries in within and of itself is what's called emotional resilience. Dave, how does the emotional resilience component piece that's measured by either a Hogan or a 16PF versus some of the others that can't get at that measure, where does that show up in the world of leadership?
Well, certainly this day and age is an excellent feature to point to that speaks to this. If there's any time when leaders of organizations need to have the emotional resilience to withstand the changes, the shocks, the pressures, the stress that goes with a leadership role, certainly your ability to be able to bounce back, have emotional resilience, be able to come back from change, surprise, not overreact, be able to stay not only in with the energy, but the persistence, just be able to have the vitality to keep going in today's challenging environment. Good emotional resilience is very critical and does have some elements in there. On top of that, for instance, we know it shows up in sales, in having the importance of being able to stay, not overreact, be able to keep bouncing back from the rejection that you get. It's certainly some elements to emotional resilience end up playing out.
Well, and on the scale that the 16PF produces in its emotional resilience component piece, the piece that I've really liked about the 16PF and I've learned from Dave over the years in the training, and that is the depth and breadth that the 16PF brings to the table, because of its richness versus a four-dimensional instrument like the DISC. The 16PF is a 16-dimensional instrument. But with that becomes the, you know, the interpretive nature of the instrument and the reports that it generates. But Dave, you've gone on further in your work over the last 40 years to develop what you call the WPI. We use that in our work that you've created. One of the things we like about that is the expatriate scale that you have in there. But what does the WPI speak to in terms of its depth that you've created with Dr. Sugar?
Well, much of what we attended to in the WPI was to be able to capture the elements that the 16PF had, as well as the Hogan, and really look at what's the as much as possible that we can capture and then apply to those business circumstances that would call for it. So for things like not only emotional resilience, but certainly adventurousness, certainly the willingness to work hard in a different environment, the ability to be able to reach out and connect and integrate yourself into a new environment. So capture those kinds of not only descriptions of that, but also then for individuals who have ended up in those positions, who have ended up doing better because of having those orientations to the way they deal with the world. That increases the chance that on an expatriate assignment, in this case, you can be successful. Connected back to the idea of the richness of something like the 16PF, it's a matter of being able to see how to look at making that connected to the realistic applications, the realistic situations that somebody's going to be in when they're out there in the work world, and be able to not only define it for the managers, but define it for themselves. That's the emotional intelligence or self-awareness piece.
Well, the interesting thing is that as I did all my research on the kinds of assessments out there for almost 5 years, I guess, before I actually chose the 16PF as the heart and soul, was interesting that not only did I come across the world of work with Dave here, but I also was asked to do for a company called Corporate Express before they were bought out by Staples, but I did all the leadership work for that organization. And there was a gentleman selected out of Europe to do the European executives, and I had all North America and Canada and South American executives to do, and they brought a gentleman in by the name of Dr. Steve O'Shaughnessy out of London. And as he and I began to converse about setting the stage for what we would utilize in the battery that we would use for this executive assessment, lo and behold, he used the 16PF and the Hogan as part of his battery as well, which is also part of ours. And of course, now the WPI is used in that battery in senior leadership roles as well as other kinds of roles. But I thought it quite interesting that when I look at the world of the 16PF, and most of the HR folks I talk to have never heard of it, it continues to amaze me of the depth of the 16PF. I know Dave uses it internationally. We've used it in international assignments, both in China and Japan, and now some German work that we're doing in Germany, which is one of the reasons why Dave's expatriate scale is really so unique. As we begin to take our next break, I want to thank those listeners for listening in. I hope you'll stay tuned. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It with my guest, Dr. Dave Watterson. We're talking about assessments and making sense of testing and understanding how to use assessments as an assessment battery. You can find out more information about what we do and how we do it by visiting www.theeg.com. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. We'll be back after the break. We're going to kind of get into some thinking skills and some other instruments around assessments. So, see you back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, and my guest, Dr. Dave Watterson. And while we were taking a break, Dave and I were just talking about a couple of things that, as I closed, I talked about Dr. Steve O'Shaughnessy and using the 16PF and the Hogan as we compared notes on what we're going to do to make a unified approach for Corporate Express at the time. Interesting enough, we both used the same assessment. And then some of you may remember Dr. Gordon Medlock, who's also a member of the firm. He and I met on an airplane going to Atlanta and got to conversing. And lo and behold, similar background, used the 16PF. But as I was talking to Dave, you know, when I talk to most HR folks, they've never heard of the 16PF. And the reluctance then by a lot of HR folks to use something they've never heard of or never researched, it just kind of freaks them out. So Dave, from a perspective of the DISC, which is a very popular, Myers-Briggs popular, predictive index, or more the popular ones, Caliper 2, versus a 16PF or a Hogan or even a CPI, what's your take on why HR is less familiar with the 16PF or the Hogan than they would be the other commodity-based items?
Well, a lot of the over time, the access and the development of instruments like the DISC and other similar, very simple measures were developed because they could be used by somebody in HR, and the qualifications for administering and interpreting those different instruments were much simpler and or more simple and required a certain degree of training, but not the same level of training that something like the 16PF required, as well as the other instruments that you're talking about, Hogan and many of the others. Now, as the awareness that through reports there is an ability to be able to make simpler the complexities and make it better aligned with the specific questions that are being, you know, that the HR community is looking to answer or ask and be able to answer. And so with the advantage of having computerization, greater research, ability to distill that complex information down into relevant topics and apply it in an appropriate manner, the access to the strength and information available in a more complex instrument becomes available. And so we're now at a point where these kinds of batteries, this kind of information can then be delivered to a broader community with less of the level of training that was required previously. It still requires somebody to be and or have some system in place in order to make sure that it's appropriate and used appropriately.
Well, and the training that goes with understanding how to interpret it versus getting a DISC report back and saying, oh, well, I'm a high D with a low I and, you know, a high C. And that's pretty common terminology for people or even the PI. The PI talks about a high D and a cutback C and, you know, and you kind of get labeled in those where you've got 16, both the DISC and the PI, you know, give you 16 different profiles and that's where you fit and you're where you fall. It's almost like you're cloned into a predisposed box by being a high D.
Yeah, and they're very broad descriptors. They're very and they have some relevance. It's and gets closer to the very broad dimensions that you have, for instance, in the five broad factors within the 16th F, that you're either outgoing, you're more dominant, you like to be in control, you like more structure. Those kinds of things. So those are broad ways of saying I'm either very organized or I'm not quite as structured. Okay, that's fine. And then you could have those four broad dimensions. But when you're getting down into the complexity of who we are as humans and some of the roles that we're talking about, like, for instance, leadership, those distinctions end up starting to cover a whole lot of people.
I guess the further example where you're headed with this, and that for the listeners' benefit, for those of you who are familiar with extroversion with Myers-Briggs or factor I on the DISC for extroversion or factor B on the PI for extroversion, you know, the 16PF also measures extroversion. But what the 16PF does, it breaks extroversion down into subcomponents. And actually breaks out five individual behaviors within extroversion that shows the depth of the extroversion and where the extroversion and how it's driven, that the others don't give you that richness in its approach. Is that fair enough, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. And it's you and I were chatting about it a little bit beforehand. So, for instance, if somebody generally is oriented more towards people than things, that's the whole description a little bit about extroversion, being interested in people. So you're interested in people, but the 16PF will look at some of the elements to that. For instance, I may like people, but I may not necessarily be that interested in going out, projecting myself into the universe in order to have that kind of contact. And I may be expecting people to come to me rather than me go to them. So I found over thousands and thousands of feedbacks that when you can give that kind of individual difference feedback to somebody, the credibility that you get not only increases, but the importance of what that may have in relationship to the job increases. If I'm going to be in sales, I need to be interested in going out and calling on people and not necessarily having them come to me if it's a sales job that requires travel, cold calling, those kinds of things. If it's a sales job where I'm at a counter, people are coming to me, then it's not going to interfere. So it's just a matter of being able to sort out those kinds of nuances, and a 16PF can sort that out, and particularly then geared to the job that you're talking about for the company, you just get much better alignment.
One of the things that we know what the 16PF does, and one of the things that you've developed, and you're gracious enough to let me co-develop the next revision, was the sales development report, which is an offshoot of the 16PF in its behavioral approach. But we know that there's eight specific behavioral traits necessary for successful in sales. I don't care what kind of sales that is, but then when you get into technical sales versus conceptual sales versus transactional sales, we know there's other differentiators of behavior that we know the 16PF can measure and the WPI can measure as well, that your four-dimensional traditional four-dimensional models, you know, just can't simply drive at.
Yes.
But it helps us understand, so what kind of salesperson will they be, and where will their challenges lie? But, you know, we spoke at the beginning of this segment about test batteries and Dave's comment about more data points and the richness. And maybe the greatest example in all the years that I've been doing this, I know, Dave, you're going to have tons of examples, but one of the greatest examples was I had a client that we were looking at, we had four internal candidates. They were looking at this candidate as taking over the European operation for all of Europe with a new opening in Poland. But nonetheless, I'm sitting down in the boardroom with the two owners of this multi-billion dollar corporation, and we're sitting down with the two owners and the director of talent management and the VP of HR, and we're debriefing what I think I see in terms of capabilities and strengths and weaknesses of those four executives that were internal candidates. And the one brother turned to me and says, "Now, you've met these people, right?" And I said, "No, sir, I've never met them." He said, "Well, you've interviewed them, or somehow you've met them." I said, "No, sir, I've never met them, just kind of giving you feedback from what, you know, that the battery of assessments tells us." And he said, "Well, that's amazing, because you've been spot on about the strengths and weaknesses of these guys for the last 2 hours, and it's just amazing that you can pull that kind of information out." Well, the older brother looked at me and says, "I'm not taking your damn test." So, you know, the richness that Dave spoke to of having more data points and the validity of using multiple assessments comes in the equation when you look at selection. And whether it's just entry level, where we may just use a 16PF alone, or international role, where certainly the WPI comes into place, but using that test battery gets into then the richness of being more effective in our ability to select the best or the right talent, not just the best talent.
Right. And it's a certainly in the selection circumstances, we certainly like to emphasize that this information goes into an interview and that gets integrated into it, and it doesn't become the selection piece, but it assists in that overall process. In the development piece, as you were talking to Rick, particularly with the sales development report, the advantage ends up being the individual gets to start to get more familiar with how these actually apply to them, and then they get to practice getting better, the whole idea about we can get better at some of these things as we become clear about how strong or weak we are relative to any one of these skills,
right,
or abilities.
Well, we're getting ready to take our final break before we go into the closing session, and we're going to come back and talk about kind of thinking skills and talk about kind of one assessment, one language concept as we come back to close out our show. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. You can check us on the web, the executive group at www.theeg.com. If you're listening and you got any questions to kind of round out the rest of the show, call us at 866-472-5790, and we'll see you after the break.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, and my guest and esteemed colleague, Dr. Dave Watterson. We've been talking about making sense of testing and utilizing the different kinds of assessments, and we've kind of been touting the 16PF, but another reason why I chose the 16PF, and I'm glad I did, is that there's a component piece of the 16PF that isn't measured by the Hogan or any of the other commodity items we spoke to earlier, and that is that 16PF gets into thinking skills. And when we incorporate our battery of assessments, we get into the more cognitive-related tests, such as the Thurston test of mental alertness, which looks at kind of reading and comprehension, or a Watson-Glaser that looks at inductive and deductive reasoning. But the relevancy to job and as the job progresses, one of the reasons why the 16PF is so valuable, and Dr. Watterson has incorporated the same concept into the WPI in terms of thinking skills, is the significance of that in higher level roles that require a higher level of thinking skills. Dave, if you'd speak to that as it relates to kind of job fit and functionality as you look at incorporating additional assessments around besides just behavior and emotional intelligence.
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about very early on. If you only take a piece of the whole element to who we are, we may miss a critical element, which ends up functionally completely. You miss the boat totally. You could want somebody to come in and say, okay, I want somebody to fly. You pick a bird. They come in. They're flying around. They're terrific. They land. You go to feed them a bowl of seeds, and they look at you and go, what are you talking about? I'm a hawk. What do I want with this? So you really need to think through what are the critical variables that are included or we need to include. Now, certainly with leadership, with a lot of jobs, the ability to think broadly, not just maybe structured logic, very rigidly, and something which requires perfection, lean manufacturing, doing it over and over again just right. So somebody that's very structured and operates in a structured, logical, practical manner, this thinking style becomes pretty important to that. But, for instance, one of the large organizations we worked with, we had procedural people. They were very structured. They got to the senior level in the organization, and they didn't have the thought flexibility to be able to create a vision, have some flexibility in their thinking, have a little bit of imagination. Their strategic thinking was poor. So it's very important to get into the thinking styles of what that person will bring to the table, not just their personality or their way of their style and their resilience and their whether they're introverted or extroverted. That isn't as critical as some of that intellectual ability, the thinking skills that are going to be involved in it, and what's the breadth and depth of those thinking skills related to the job.
Well, one of the things then that is a little disheartening as I've worked over the last 20 years of doing this, is that there's a reluctance by organizations to, if you will, spend more money to do more assessments. And the value then is that one assessment, I mean, the 16PF is probably one of the closest instruments I've seen to a one-size-fits-all. But nonetheless, there are other things that are critical when you get into more senior level positions that then drive things such as the derailers. What really causes an executive to derail besides behavior, it can be a lack of thinking skills. So from the standpoint of really utilizing a battery of assessments, Dave, that then goes further into the thinking skills component piece, what do you gain by taking that next step?
Well, it's as with a lot of things where incrementally you get more value by adding other components to the process. And what you always want to look at is not going too far and adding so much that you're not really getting added value. What's the point of the value curve where all of a sudden it flattens out? So 16PF certainly gets you a big step, adding some additional measures for if the job requires some pretty sophisticated thinking. So certainly paying attention to the thinking's either style and or skills there. We certainly have adapted it for various kinds of, if there's a specific a talent that's necessary, for instance, if there's in relationship to accuracy, precision, mechanical, there are other specific ability pieces you could add to the battery, but certainly for the general leadership piece, those things wouldn't be necessary. So you're going to get more value, and it will pay itself off very quickly. You and I both know that the cost of hiring today and retention ends up being extremely critical to a business nowadays. So a relatively small incremental cost of adding, first of all, testing to begin with, not to mention a few additional measures, given that they're valid and relevant, you're much better off than hiring somebody and then missing the fact that it's a hawk and not a seed-eating critter.
Yeah, so. And that's a great analogy. I think as we start to kind of bring closure on today's show, we talk about testing per se. You know, there's as I mentioned earlier, maybe I think I did. I know there's a lot of people. I mean, I utilize the disc in certain parts of my practice more in team building side of things, but I know there's some people out there who try to position and sell companies on the fact of using the disc as a selection tool. Those of you who may be listening who are using the disc as a selection tool, please don't. It's not designed as a selection tool. It's not validated as a selection tool. But one of the things that Dave made a comment to me years ago, and I'll read it to the listeners, but, you know, it's called, they gave me this analogy called the surgeon, and its concept is merely failing a test doesn't necessarily guarantee your desired results. Just like the scalpel in the hands of a skilled surgeon, it's the surgeon, not the scalpel, that makes the difference. Looking at a particular test should not be the only criteria for its use. Looking at the process and whether you're working with a skilled surgeon that understands how to use it should be paramount. And that's always resonated to me when Dave said that, because Dave's practice and mine go beyond the world of just selling people tests and then hope you can figure out how to use it. Dave, if you'd speak to that concept, if you will, in terms of its application and use, and what differentiates people like you and I and what we do versus somebody who might just come in and sell somebody a disc and you get a report or predictive detection, you get a two-page report. Expound on that, would you?
Well, I guess without going on too long about it, it comes down to that same piece of, so what's the experience of using those instruments? What's the background and refinement of those skills in applying it, using it, paying attention to its appropriate use and inappropriate use, the training and the support that you're able to provide ends up making all the difference in the outcome that you're looking for. If you want a quality outcome, you're not going to go to somebody that, or at least hopefully not, you're going to go to somebody that's not very well skilled or used to it, and they may have a terrific tool. They may have one of the sharpest scalpels in the world, but in the hands of somebody that doesn't have that kind of background, if you're going to go to a surgeon for a particular technique, you go in and find out, so how many heart surgeries have you got? You know, have you done? How many are under your belt? Where was your residency? Who'd you study with? So you're going to want to pay attention to that, and if it's a good, if they've got a good scalpel and a good skill, then you've got a pretty good chance of that person delivering a good product.
Well, I know that as my near last count, as I've tried to evaluate how many profiles I've interpreted in almost 20 years of doing this, is somewhere around 8,000 is my guess. But, Dave, you've been doing this for 40 years. You've got to be in the tens of thousands in terms of profiles you've looked at, people you've fed back with. What do you think that is?
Well, it's 30,000 or 40,000 I've given feedback on and or gone over and or used in the process of doing a write-up to give back to somebody. And with that comes that richness of context. So that's what you're going to want to look for in others is what's been your experience.
So for those of you folks who've been listening to our show, we hope you've gained some insight around why Dave and I have a propensity to use the 16PF and why I've developed the relationship with Dave that I have. And Dave truly has been my friend and mentor, and my practice is a direct reflection of some of the things that he's taught me over the years, and I certainly appreciate and value our business and relationship and our friendship. And for those of you who've been listening in and want more information, you can write us at rick@theag.com. You can check further into the things that we've done, our client work. When you look at the amount of time that Dave's been in the business using the instrument, my background, the number, a dozen at last count, of people who've used me at one firm and gone to another and taken us along speaks to the richness of what we've tried to provide. This show's been based on trying to help those of you understand and get a better handle on making sense of testing and some of the things available. Tune in next week when we talk about leadership. Dr. Watterson's going to be our guest in 2 weeks as we get into the leadership challenge. So thanks for listening, and look forward to having you join our show again next week.
Yeah, thanks. Certainly thanks for having me on, Rick.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.